start off with. It says, Shabbos is a small os. Why is Shabbos called a small os? Because it's a time for thinking, for learning, for introspection, right? And it's relatively easy to keep, because if one day out of the week to not work, relatively, obviously, it depends on the person, but relatively so, it's kind of easy to keep. Even if you're on the farm, even if you're working on the farm, you can pretty much keep something like Shabbos. Just a day, you can deal with it, you'll deal with it for a little bit, not that. Shemitah is completely different. Shemitah is called the os gavul. Os Asin Rabravin is what it's called by the Zohar. A huge oath. The reason why is because to sit a whole year and to say, he's in charge, and I'm not going to do anything for my field, I'm going to do absolutely nothing all year long, even if I see crazy things happening and not doing anything about it, that is a huge oath. That 100% shows you're with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. A day, whatever. It's good, obviously, it does help us, but a year is an unbelievable amount of
time. Not just a day, it's one day a week.
Yeah, you're 100% right, you're right. A day every week is big, that obviously is big, but a whole year straight in which you cannot do anything at all and just trust in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's called Asin. And Rabbanan. That's what the Ishbitzer, the Me'ashi Loch calls it. That's the lesson of the entire Parsha. Shemitah we go into, and then Yovel. And within Yovel we say, and you shouldn't give ribbis to anybody. That's the idea behind it. Before we get into the redeeming of houses and everything like that. So, you have to understand Hasidim, and I did something similar to this last year. Hasidim define things in like three basic categories. There is Olam, what's going on in the world. There's Nefesh, the people involved. And there's Shana, or Zman, the time that's involved. And there's always something that's equal. For example, the Kohen Gadol is the greatest of people who goes into the Kodesh HaKedoshim, which is the greatest of places, on Yom Kippur, which is the holiest time of the year. Right? So they compare like the three together and they put things together. They make the great Torah regarding this sort of a thing. It's interesting though. Here the Ishbitzer says it a little bit differently. He says it like this. He says, Olam is the buying of fields and krumim and vineyards and things like that. You think you're the boss. You think you're the one who owns it. I'm the one who owns this land. I bought my house. I bought my car. I own everything in there. And it's mine to do whatever I want. And then bam, you don't, it's not yours. You can't do anything with it. Seventh year comes along, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shemitah, you think you own it, and Shemitah owns you. Like, you have nothing you can do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, absolutely not. I take everything. And whatever you have left over, that's what you can go ahead and do. That's Olam. That's the part that's called Olam. There's also something called Nefesh. Nefesh would be the Avodim. And what happens to slaves? You think, right, that I own the slave, I can do whatever I want with them. It's an Eved Ivri, specifically. You think you can do, you can count on them for anything you need, and you'll have them for as long as you want, right? I granted 6 years or whatever it is, there's a limitation how much I bought them for, but I'm going to have them for anything I need, and then all of a sudden Yovel comes in. Again, it's the bam effect, where Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I know you thought you had Avodim, it's not yours anymore. It's mine, because we called an Esau Avodim. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I own everybody. I'm really the one in charge, and it's not you, Avadai Hain. It's my servants and Shtari Kodem, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu according to Rashi. That my star comes first. I'm the one that comes there. That's Olam and that's Nefesh. Shana comes in Zman. Ribbis defines the beauty of Zman, where a person says, when it comes to interest, Ribbis is guaranteed money later on. You're guaranteed that you're going to get something. All you have to do is wait. You don't have to do anything. You just sit there and wait. It's the easy business that a Kadosh Baruch Hu again says, no. I'm going to take care of everything. That's the concept in which we have to say, listen, Olam, Nefesh, and Shana, God owns them all. And even though there are things that seem like that we own it, Shemitah, and Yovel, and Ribbis, tell us, no, it's not yours, it is no Sheikhus to you, and that's the only bitachon, the only true trust that we have to have in anything is in God we trust. That's the concept behind it. I still think, and I've thought, I said this over to my Rebbe years ago, and he told me I'm a fool. There was no way this is true. I said that the reason why America has been so successful over the years, the reason why they've been able to do so many things over the years, is because on the dollar bill they write, in God we trust. If you write such a thing, irregardless of how you feel, whatever it is, separation of church and state and everything like that, you write that down, all of a sudden, in God we trust, on your money, on your money. I don't trust my dollar bill. I trust God who gave me the dollar bill. Right there is the idea behind it. And the fact that it hasn't been taken off yet is the pure raya that there's going to be a flock of Klal Yisrael when it comes to these types of things. Hopefully it lasts forever. Hopefully they never make a law or a bill that takes it off. But that's the concept. Yeah.
Really, in 1900s they took it off for a couple of years only because the president was so religious he didn't want people gambling with money that said God's name.
No way. Really? Which guy? Garfield. For sure Garfield.
No, I don't remember.
By during the Great Depression, right?
Yeah. that's not really, no, before 1800s. Here we go. So now, that's the first part. That's just this little bit of, what Shemitah stands for, and how do you get into Shemitah, everything like that. Now, here we go. We all know the famous first line of the parsha. Da'aber Hashem mo Moshe. I was actually learning with somebody, and the guy just read over the, this morning in laning. The guy who laned at Skokie Yeshiva for the morning, he immediately said, Da'aber Hashem mo Moshe le'mor. He just immediately said it. He ran through it. But it's not, Da'aber Hashem mo Moshe, Bahar Sinai le'mor. You have to add on those words, Bahar Sinai. What's Bahar Sinai doing here? So Rashi has the famous line that if you go to yeshivish places, you hear it all the time. Mine in Shemitah, it's Har Sinai. What does Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? What does one have to do with the other? Well, you mentioned Har Sinai by Shemitah, you're not mentioned by anything else. So Rashi answers us, just like Shemitah, with all of its pratim, and the klalim, and the dikdukim, were given together on Har Sinai, so too every mitzvah was given together on Har Sinai. Not only the mitzvah, all the pratim, and the klalim, and the dikdukim, everything was given on Har Sinai. Granted, that's a great answer. Tremendous answer that everything's given there. But why specifically mention that by Shemitah? You could do that by Shabbos. You could do that by Ribbis. You could do it by any other mitzvah that's mentioned in this parsha. You don't have to go into anything different. Go into this parsha if you want to put it over here. Why Shemitah? Why does Shemitah get that idea of it's here, so it goes everywhere else? So Moshe finds it as a really interesting thought. Certain mitzvahs were given before Matan Torah. You name a couple mitzvahs given before Matan Torah? Shabbos, Korban Pesach, the obvious ones, and all those that come with it, right? Bris Mila, right? We have Rosh Chodesh, Kiddush HaChodesh is mentioned. We have a couple others. Kibbutz Av Ve'Eim was supposed to be given in Mara. There's a couple others, right? Those are the ones I think I have. I have Shabbos, Kibbutz Av Ve'Eim, Kiddush HaChodesh, Mila, and Korban Pesach. It could be that originally, says Ramosha, Peru Revu, in theory, it was commanded to everybody, right? So in theory, everybody had it. It could be, this is what he says, such an unbelievable line, that originally, our only field to keep mitzvos was because there's a reason behind them. There's a tam sikhli. I can think about why I have them. It makes sense to have a mitzvah of Purubu. It makes sense even to have a mitzvah bris mila to separate us from the other nations of the world. Shabbos is obvious. To rest one day a week, that's obvious. The Korban Pesach was to remind ourselves that you can give reasons for everything. And the only reason why we kept the mitzvahs, because of the ta'anim involved. It says Ramosha. But there were no isurim involved. You were commanded to keep them. But if you didn't do it, who says it was an isser? Who says it was an isser? Who says that there was an isser to not do it? It's just suggestions that make sense, that if you think about them, at the time, they said, oh, we're going to go out and keep them. Now, that's the way mitzvahs were all the way back when Shem the Aver were going around. I'm sorry?
Do you get isser where you don't keep
mitzvahs? Now, yeah, for example, if you don't wear tefillin in the morning, you're over on an isser. You're over on an aseh. Right, if you don't wear tzitzis, you're over on an aseh.
They only have paid that are
granted. 100% that you get kares for. But you are over on an isser. Meaning you are chayav a korban ola if you're over on an isser aseh. That's Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra. If you do a mitzvah aseh and you're over on, you don't do it. You don't wear tefillin one day. You're chayav in a korban ola. You're chayav in something like that. There are chiyuvim writing over. It says Ramosha, but before Matan Torah, there was no such thing. There were suggestions, but if you didn't do it, okay, it's not that big of a deal. So, Shem Be'Aver, that's what it was all about. Shem Be'Aver, the yeshiva Shem Be'Aver, says Ramosha is brilliant. And so do with Avram Yinus Tamidim, the Nefesh Asher Asim Bukharan. Avram Yinu and Shem Be'Aver taught their mitzvos that made sense. Who knows? I don't know if Ramosha, because obviously we say that Moshe that Avram Yinu was able to keep all 613 mitzvos. But who knows? Maybe they didn't do Paraduma. Or maybe to them Paraduma made sense. B'nai Noach, that for sure. That was a different story altogether. But Avram Yinu kept on others, and Shem Be'Aver did something a little bit different. Their concept of what mitzvos were was, you should do this because it'll be better for your life. In fact, you know, Shmuley, I just thought of this. Maybe that makes a lot of sense. Shem Mitzvos B'nai Noach, six of them are lavin, right? You can't eat Avram Yinu, you can't curse God, you can't steal. Right? You can't commit adultery, you can't murder, and you're allowed to worship Avodah Zarah. And then the seventh one is set up court systems. Okay? Set up court system is the weird one. If you're not over on that, the Ramban obviously says that's what happened by Shechem. But maybe the concept is that by the non-Jews, it was only Lavan. And then somehow will take on the form of a Lavan. I don't know how that would be in some way, shape, or form. If you don't have judges, I don't know what it would be exactly. There's no specific assay. But for these, I'm sorry. Yeah, like Sodom's justice was obviously the opposite of what you wanted to do. So maybe that was the idea. I don't know. But that's a great call. But the mitzvahs that were taught by Shem Be'Aver, the mitzvahs that were taught by Avram Avinu, were revolutionary. And they only made sense to those people they were able to talk to. But eventually, the people fell off them. Because kids always think they know more than their parents, and the grandkids especially. So when the Shem Be'Aver or Avram Avinu was gone, the people went on, and eventually they said, what's the reason? Why are we doing this? And people didn't have the same answer that Avram Avinu did. People didn't know the same thing that Shem Be'Aver did. So eventually they just said, forget it, I don't think it makes sense. So they stopped doing them. Because the whole reason for the mitzvahs back then was because it made sense. But when it doesn't make sense anymore, then you don't do it. And that's what happened to them. They all lost everything.
But I thought it was shame they ever learned things out through nature. Like they learned creation of God and all that.
Yaakov Kamenetsky has another vort on what shame they ever was and what they did. This is a different vort. Meaning the mitzvahs that they would have had, says Rav Moshe, they were mitzvahs. They were ideas that came from the Torah itself, like keep it up the aim. Or like having a day of Shabbos, like a day of rest. Or that
becomes
really
a concept. Is it a mitzvah? Is it a mitzvah?
It's not a mitzvah, because mitzvah literally means tzibur.
To guard the garden.
These were things that they figured out from the world, and they said, this makes sense, so go ahead and do it. But eventually people said, it doesn't make sense to us anymore. When the taivas are added on to the fact that they don't have somebody who's able to answer up all their questions, they said, forget it, we're out. So nefesh shasu b'charim, gone. The yeshiva shem de'ever, gone. They were completely gone. And there was nothing there. They were mora heterim. They started keeping the mitzvahs and they stopped after a while. They blamed their decisions on the faulty lines of reasoning made by their parents. They said, it's my parents' fault. They didn't understand it well, but I understand and I know I don't have to do this anymore. That's why those talmidim didn't make it. That's why none of them made it. That's Torah before Har Sinai. Before we received the Torah in Har Sinai. Maybe that was even the mitzvahs that they had in Mitzrayim, and the mitzvahs they received in Mara. Maybe even those were that way. And that maybe is the pshat and ilu kirabanu lifnei Har Sinai. The lo nasan lanu as the Torah, dayenu. Had you brought us to Har Sinai, and we would have done the Torah as Avraham Avinu did, telling us the reasons for it, without doing the mitzvahs as a tzivoy, but doing it just because it makes sense, dayenu, that would have been enough. But you also gave us the Torah as a tzivoy, as a real tzivoy, that there's no way to take off any of the mitzvahs. That is crazy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you so much. That's the concept of the dayenu. What an unbelievable concept. I'm sorry? Yeah. That was my only issue. Maybe in Paraduma also makes sense in a way. To be metahir somebody. The idea of the Paraduma being metame, the guys who do it. It's metahir those who get sprayed on, but it's metame, the guys who do it. That doesn't make any sense. But the concept of, maybe they understood the Paraduma a little bit. Maybe before Matan Torah there was a concept of understanding the reason behind it. I don't know. That's a little bit hard. But that's what Moshe's vort. So let's go on. So what happened after the Torah was given? Torah was given at Har Sinai and you're commanded. No longer can you do it if you want to, if it makes sense to you, if you think it's a good thing. Not anymore. Now the Tanim and the Sibels don't matter. It doesn't make a difference if you don't understand it whatsoever. In fact, you have to do it even if you think you know the reason, and the reason doesn't fall off, you're still chayav to go ahead and do it. And not only the Torah itself, even Takanos of Chazal are the same way. Because it says in Yud Zayin, Yud Aleph, and Devarim, you have to listen to what Chazal says. So they make a Takana, you can't even question their reasoning. You can't even question the reason that they're going ahead. This is a different world where the arguments of self-proclaimed atheists or self-proclaimed ethicists get up there and say, this doesn't make any sense anymore. Shechita doesn't make any sense. We go up there and we say, no, I could care less what you think. Shechita, it doesn't matter if it doesn't make sense. A chiyuv. You have an absolute chiyuv. The prototype for such logic destroyers is Shemitah. Looking at Shemitah as a whole, says Rav Moshe, teaches you the most unbelievable ultimate lesson when it comes to any of this. Must be halftime. Halftime? Makes sense. Okay, it's the most unbelievable type of concept that you have in this entire world. Here's the idea. How in the world, and now granted, I understand that laying the land fallow, not working the land for 1 year, will help out, it will improve the ground. It'll cause the nutrients to go through. I understand that completely. I totally understand how that comes through. But to tell an entire nation, this we talked about before, Benjamin, to tell an entire nation, nobody worked this year. Nobody worked. Can you imagine any nation doing that? Any nation. Now granted, it's only the farmers. But the agriculture was the only way they had food back then. There was no, let's bring in food from other nations. Let's bring in food from other countries. They couldn't do that. There was nothing to do. How long are you going to be able to keep? I'm sorry.
Most of the entire land. Usually when their land fallows.
100%. Just like one at a time. You leave your land fallow in this year. You leave your land fallow in the next year. And that and that and whatever. That I can understand. Everybody in 1 year? Who in the world would tell somebody that? What kind of a leader would say such a thing? It's crazy. It's such an unbelievable concept. And says Rav Moshe, it's a proof. Rav Schwab also has a piece on this. It's a proof that God must have given the Torah. Because no idiot would have ever suggested that. No person, no matter how egotistical he was, would have ever suggested for an entire nation to just say, don't work in the fields. Don't be able to do this. It's just a nutty idea. A nutty, nutty idea.
Goes to show that Hashem gave the mitzvah of Shemitah, not necessarily the whole Torah.
And that's exactly it. That's the first pasuk. It's a tzivoy, a mitzvah Hashem that we keep Shemitah. Shemitah proves that the entire Torah was also given in Har Sinai. That's the idea of Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe b'Har Sinai Lemor. Mine in Shemitah Yisrael Har Sinai. Because just like Shemitah must have been given in Har Sinai, because no other person would have done such a thing, no other person would have said, let's do Shemitah, because it's such a crazy concept. If Shemitah was given in Har Sinai, all the other mitzvahs are given in Har Sinai as well. All those mitzvahs that you think you understand, that you think could have been made up by Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu could have said to Klal Yisrael, they would have accepted anyway. They also were given in Har Sinai. What an unbelievable concept.
The other way, that only Shemitah and maybe the Sefer Devarim were given in Har
Sinai. I understand. I'm not making the argument of why that's so. I'm telling you that's what the Torah is trying to teach you. Okay, if I'm giving it to you in my whole book, I've got one book with all the mitzvahs in it. If one of them was definitely, no question, said in Har Sinai by a god, the rest of them are also there. The whole book is true. That's the concept that Rashi is trying to tell you over here. Even if you think it doesn't make, there's no logic behind any mitzvah. Mitzvahs must be kept purely because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said so, for no other reason. That's the lesson that we're learning from Shemitah. That's what we're getting out of this. It's an unbelievable little lesson. Pasuk Kaf. And then it gets to Pasuk Kaf. Now this is one of, again, crazy psukim in this week's parsha. Crazy. Only 57 psukim. By the way, the gematria of Zon, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mazing you, that He gives you mizonos throughout the entire year. That's the idea of the 57 psukim in this parsha. But again, look at this. The chisom, after we go through Shemitah, and then Yovel, it says, the chisomu, and if you will say, manokho bashana shviz, what will we eat in the seventh year? By the way, side point. I don't know why it says, what will we eat in the seventh year? You'll eat in the seventh year the grain from the sixth year. It's what are we going to eat in the eighth year? That's where the problem lies. The problem is not the seventh year. The problem is the eighth year. So I'm not so sure what that means exactly. But he says, what are we going to eat, I guess, during that Shemitah cycle? We're not planting, we're not gathering in our grain. What are we going to do? Says God, I'm going to command my bracha in the sixth year. And the grain is going to grow for 3 years. The grain is going to last you for 3 years. Even if it's Shemitah and then Yovel, we have two straight years where you can't work your field. It'll work for Shemitah year, meaning the eighth year. It'll work for the ninth year. And even the tenth year where you're allowed to plant, it'll work for that year as well. It'll work for it would be the seventh year, the eighth year, and the ninth year. Seventh year, which is Shemitah, you're eating from the sixth year crops. The eighth year, which is Yovel, you're eating from the Shemitah crops. And the ninth year, where you're planting, you're still eating from the Shemitah crops. 3 years the grain is going to last. Says God, I promise you, I'm going to make a bumper crop that's going to last for 3 years. That's the concept. Okay. What's going on? What are these people asking? Says the Chiddush Arim, the Ger Rebbe, had we not said anything at all, had you not asked the question, had you not said anything, if you would have sat there and said, God, I believe you. Everything will be okay. Then, says the Chiddush Arim, Hashem would have let the grain grow into bumper crops without having to make a tzivui. It would have been automatic. It would have been a bracha. There would have been memeila. You just would have seen it happen. You wouldn't have asked any questions. You would have seen the miracle happen. You would have been like, that's unbelievable. There would be no need for the tzivc espirchosi. Now we need a special tzivoy, right? A special tzivoy because we asked for it. And that's on a lower level of miraculous levels, a lower level of miracle. That's the Chiddush Arim. Rav Moshe adds on to that. He says even starker. Now that you've asked, I'm going to give you more grain in the sixth year. But have you not asked? No. You would have been good enough with the grain that you would have had in the sixth year, and that would have been it. It would have been a normal crop. The crop would have grown. A sixth-year crop, it would have been perfectly fine. It would have been normal. And you would have counted it, and you would have been like, the same if I had my fifth year, same as my fourth year, same as my third year, and it goes, whatever. But that little bit of grain in the sixth year would have lasted not only an entire extra year, it would have lasted an entire extra 2 years. It would last for an extra 3 years. That's what a normal crop would have been, which is a much bigger miracle. Says Moshe, it's better for you. Why is it better for you? Less work. Less work. If it's a bumper crop, you have to cut more. You have to gather in more. You have to wait longer for it to dry out. You have to have bigger storage houses. You have to build new storage houses. Here, says Ramosha, you don't have to do anything. It's a normal crop. Just reap, gather, store it. And it'll last for 3 years. That would have been an even bigger miracle. Had you not done anything at all, it would have been unbelievable. But now that you asked, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to do something for you. So you see that I'm with you. So what am I going to do? I'm going to make a bumper crop. It's not so good for you. You're going to have to do a little bit more. You're going to have to work a little bit harder. It's not as much of a practical mace. But that's what's going to happen over there.
Just a lack of emunah?
Yes, that's the idea behind it.
So we have punishment.
The lack of emunah causes us to see the miracle with our very eyes, which means that it's going to be worse for us.
But isn't it never the same? I mean, are we allowed to, like, we're small people. Why can't we ask?
Give me a second.
Yes.
Maybe that's why they said, well, even the seventh year, because that's what they were like.
Oh, because even that was the concept right over there. That's a good call. Rav Moshe, by the way, adds on, and he says, perhaps it even happened to certain people in Shemitah itself. Certain people asked, and they got a bumper crop. Certain people didn't ask, and they got a normal crop. But either way, their grain lasted. Either way, the grain lasted for however long. It might have happened every single Shemitah cycle. Somebody asked, and somebody got a bumper crop, and other people didn't ask, and they didn't get the bumper crop. The Chassam Sofer and the Kli Yakar take it a step further. So we have the Chedush HaRim, you got Rav Moshe, and now the Chassam Sofer takes it even further. Says the Chassam Sofer, don't count it. Take the grain in, and don't count it. Don't do anything at all. You're asking this question in the seventh year, right? You're asking in the seventh year, what are we going to eat? We're not going to have enough food. You're asking right now. So you already know what the sixth year crops held. Why don't you just count it and see if it was a bumper crop or not? If you're asking after the bumper crop happens, then you know, was it a bumper crop or was it not a bumper crop? You know what's going to happen. The answer is, no, you're counting in the seventh year, says the Chassam Sofer, and the bracha is only because it's somewhat mina ayin. You don't see anything. You don't see anything. You don't count it. You have no idea how much it is, and at the end of the day, it just works. It works for 2 or 3 years, and the bracha is automatic, says the Chassam Sofer. Just don't count it. Similar to the idea of the Bava Sali, of wrapping a little cloth around your bottle, wrapping the little cloth, and pouring for person after person after person in the room. Those who knew the Bava Sali, my Rosh Hashiva is not, Rabbi Lerfield from Beis Yisrael, was not a big Hasidish HaMaisa guy. I mean, if you know him, he's a Litvak beyond Litvak. Brisker all the way through, Talmud of Rechaim Zimmerman. And there's nothing, there's no Hasidish bone in his body. But I asked him on Purim once, when he doesn't get drunk, but he gets high enough that I can ask him questions that I never would during the rest of the time of the year. I also get high enough that I can ask him questions that I never would during the rest of the time of the year. I don't want to be quoted that I was ever high. Yeah, but regardless, that's not a good quote. But regardless, I asked him, I knew he went to Yeshivat HaDorom. Yeshivat HaDorom was downtown right near Netzivot, right by the Bava Sali. So I asked him, did Rebbe ever see anything that had happened by the Bava Sali? So he told me one story, this is a story for another time, but he told me one time other, he said he always saw the Bava Sali giving out the drinks. He just wrapped it around so that nobody could see how much drink was left in the bottle, and he started pouring Iraq, and not just down like a little tiny Iraq for everybody. Poured full cups of Iraq or whatever type of liquor he had, full cups for everyone in the room. Everyone in the room, she said, I looked to see if there was a little pipe coming through, you know, see if he was pulling it out from somewhere. But no, the Bava Sali was well known for this, because the bracha doesn't stop. If it's someone in the ayin, the bracha never stops. The concept of the Isha Shunamis, the Isha Namis, who was told by Elisha, gather all the bowls you can get and start pouring the oil. Start pouring the oil. However many kalim you get, you start pouring the oil. I just heard a really funny story. There's a guy who came to get a bracha from one of the Ger Rebbes. I think it was Rav Avraham Mordechai of Ger. So he came to the Ger Rebbe. I just forgot the story. Came to the Ger Rebbe and he asked him for you know, like a whatever, like an approbation for something that he had done. So the Ger Rebbe started asking him, so what are you doing? You know, what do you do? So he told him, and he said, okay, so you're learning, so let me ask you a few shilas. He asked him a question, the guy had no idea. So he asked him another question, the guy had no idea. He asked him like a bunch of questions, the guy had nothing, absolutely nothing. So he realized the guy didn't know anything, right? So he didn't know what to say. He had no idea what to say. So he wrote down in the sheet of paper, he said, if this guy was in the Isha Shunamis' room when she was pouring the oil would have never stopped. Shot is, he was an empty kli. He was an empty kli with nothing there. But it sounds really good. Because he's like, he was the Baal Navi or whatever. That's what the Ger Rebbe wrote in his approbation. That was the actual approbation. Pretty good stuff. Yeah, that was pretty good stuff. Regardless, that's the concept. No, the guy for sure didn't get it. He didn't get it. The guy took it and was like, thank you very much, Rebbe, and left. I once was reading a Sefer as I was going through, like, there was just a Sefer. I don't want to say what it was, but it had a Haskama for Moshe. Moshe wrote back to everybody less for Haskama. Problem was, what he wrote. Most people just took Ramosha's Haskama, just put it in the sefer without reading what it was. So Moshe writes in this Hakdama, I was reading the sefer, it's like one of these Kolesh Sfarim. He wrote in the Hakdama, he said, I only looked at one vort and I don't agree with it. So I don't vouch for anything that's written in the sefer. But if he feels that this is Torah, then he can go ahead and print it. That's what he wrote in the Hakdama. That's a Haskama. It's not a Haskama, that's a eulogy. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen, but that's the concept of what he was there for. This is the concept of keep pouring and pouring and pouring and going through all the way through. The concept of a bracha never stopping. That's the idea of what the Chassam Sofer says. This is what would have happened. Had you not asked a question, it just would have happened. Don't ask any questions. Don't count. Don't do anything. It would have been fine. Now that you ask, you'll see that it's a bumper crop. It's going to be obvious that it's a bumper crop. You won't have any choice, and the bracha is not going to be as great. So those are the three levels of Chedusha Rim, the Rav Moshe and the Chassam Sofer, not to counter whatsoever, but the Rav Yashi says a little bit differently. He asks the same question, the obvious question. When would people ask this? If they're asking it in the seventh year, don't they already know what happened in the sixth year? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, don't worry, I made the sixth year into a bumper crop. And the guy's like, oh, really? I didn't... And if it did become a bumper crop, why would he have asked it in the first place? He would have asked because he already knows the sixth year was a great crop. So if he asked it beforehand, why would you ask it beforehand? What in the world would be the point of asking it beforehand? Why would you do such a thing? It's not, Shemitah's not here yet. It's not time for Shemitah yet. So what are you asking? Here's the concept. Here's what Rav Yashiv says. This really gets to what you were asking before, because this is really getting into the heart of Bitachon. And this is going to be a little hard for a lot of people to understand, because this is major Israeli mentality. This is Israel to its very best, the very best extent, and a Mea Sharim Rav at its very best extent. Says Rav Yashiv, everyone is so worried about what's going to be. We want all our questions answered right now, even though the issue doesn't apply right now. Right now, everything's fine. You have storage houses full of grain. You've got bank accounts full of money. Everything's doing well. You have cupboards full of food. Everything's good. But you're worried about 7 years from now, what's going to be in that eighth year? What's going to be after Shemitah's there? What am I going to do when I don't have any food? Says Rav Yashiv, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you asking the question now? Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you're asking such a silly question, then I'll give you the silly answer. Don't worry. I'm going to take care of everything. I'm going to make sure that the 6 years is a bumper crop for you, so you don't need your bitachon. You don't have to trust in me. You can just take care of the fact that you see it with your very own eyes, and everything's taken care of. Well, Yashiv said, it's like a curse to claw you so. And if you do ask it 5 or 6 or 7 years in advance, you're crazy. What are you thinking? Don't ask such questions, because of course I'm going to take care of you. You think I would let you starve? You think I would make you a tzibui, and then I would let you starve? Obviously I'm going to give the food. Obviously I'm going to take care of you. Don't worry. That's the bitachon. And it's not only that. It's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands you, not just suggests you. Look at the pasuk before that. V'nasna aretz piria. The land will give off its fruit. V'chaltam lasova, and you will eat it with satiation. V'shavtam lebetach alel. And you will sit there in surety with bitachon upon the land. V'chisomru, and if you ask, etc., etc., etc. Says Rav Yashiv, it's not a suggestion, eat with satiation. It's telling you, you better eat with satiation. In other words, don't start saving in the first year because I may not have enough in the seventh year. Don't start saving now a little bit of grain in the first year, and a little bit of grain in the second year, a little bit of grain in the third year, and keep going and going and going until you get to the seventh year, and you say, I'm not worried about Shemitah. I've got all my grain saved up. I was the ant. I took care of myself all the way through. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's not what I want. I'm commanding you the Chaltam Lasova. Fill yourselves up during those 6 years. Work yourselves off, and have bitachon. Bishatam levetach alel. I want you to trust me. Trust me, and have everything you want to eat now. And when you get to the seventh year, don't worry, I'll take care of you. That's the command of a Kadosh Baruch. It's a crazy line. Again, how do we live without savings accounts? Who doesn't have a savings account of some sort? Who doesn't have that? Rav Chaim Brisker, they say the mile of Rav Chaim Brisker is that he didn't go overnight with a penny in his house. He would never have a penny. If he had any money in the house by the end of the day, he gave it away to the poor. He would not sleep. Not that Rav Chaim Brisker slept, but he wouldn't sleep with money in the house. That's unbelievable level of bitachon. That's the level of bitachon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is commanding Dor Deah for the people like Moshe Rabbeinu and everybody else that they have to have. You have to have that level of bitachon. Then no, I'm going to take care of you. Yes, Shmuel.
Maybe pshat is that they were having insecurity because the whole time in the Midbar they had the mun.
Even more so. What was the concept of the mun? What was the concept of the mun in bitachon? You could never leave it overnight. What happened if you left it overnight? It rotted. You couldn't leave it overnight. You have to sit there and say, I have enough food for today. Who cares about tomorrow? And that the Israel found it hard to grasp. In Bar Zbaloska, they complain. They're like, what are you going to do about tomorrow? Come on, you got to give us something. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the slav. And the slav they could leave overnight. You need something in your cupboards? Fine, go ahead and keep the slav. It's so different from our American mentality of buy at Sam's Club and you'll have enough for the next 12 years. You'll have enough for the next however many, whatever you need for the next however long. It's a different type of mentality. It's a different type of concept. This is the concept of pure bitachon. It's a lesson in bitachon that halavai we should all get to. We should all get to that level. And I've said this story before. I'm going to say this story again. I was once in a car with my mashkiach, and his wife was sitting there. One of my mashkiachim, and his wife was sitting there, and she said in the front, she said, "I saved up a ton of money for Yom Tov. I saved up a total of 10,000 shekel for us to buy clothing and this and whatever it is, all for Yom Tov." She saved up all the way through. He said, "That's great." You know, my mashkiach said, "Oh, that's great. That's tremendous." And she said, "Yeah, but my neighbor made me feel so bad." I said, "What happened?" The neighbor said to her, "Why in the world would you save the money and then go ahead and spend it on the clothes, borrow the money from a gemach, and spend all the time paying it back?" That's what the Israeli mentality said to this American lady. She's like, "I just don't get it. Why would you do that?" And here's the pshat. Because the Israeli mentality is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide. And if all of a sudden you get a windfall, some type of money that you weren't expecting, and you're saving it, it doesn't seem like such a bracha. But if you're paying back the money, and then all of a sudden you get a windfall that you never expected, what does that become? It's a miracle. Oh, all of a sudden I got the money and that's that. American.
No,
it's what we are.
Yeah, but why are we going to that? It's a matter of borrowing money from a gemach that maybe people might really need if you can save them. That's not Israeli versus American. That's insanity.
I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. I totally hear you. I get you. I totally agree with you. Because nobody does this. Nobody here does this.
Yeah.
And the problem with it is that a person doesn't have a total amount of bitachon, then you have tons and tons of people going collecting.
You have bitachon. So wait, not borrow from a gemach, but wait until I've paid that so God sends him a
windfall.
Treasure chest from your mind. Well, going to the gemach already,
there is bitachon for yourself and jump off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Two different types of bitachon.
That's a good call. That's a good call. We have to get everybody involved. You're right. You're right. I agree with you entirely.
You have the
tough
problem,
that's
the
gemach
always has money.
Yeah. Well,
there you go.
The higher level
talking
that you can't
fathom. Yeah. This is the highest level. I will tell you right now.
I would go to a bank and be like, listen,
the level that this is referring to, I will tell you right now, the level this is referring to is either used by tzaddikim, it's tzaddikim, or fools. It's one of the two. It's tzaddikim or fools that are going to be able to go ahead and do this. Pure tzaddikim or fools. But, again, I'm not doing this. I don't have that amount of emunah. I don't have that. But that's the concept of where Kadosh Baruch Hu says, V'tziv Yisias Prakasi.
Exactly
what it is.
Being a true tzaddik, someone who really has that level of emunah, shouldn't have to be borrowing from a gemach.
You're right. You're right. A greater tzaddik will be Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, who his wife told him, "We need food. We don't have any food in the house." Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld said, "Fine." Closed his gemara, walked outside, found a gold coin in the street 3 minutes later, came back and gave it to his wife. One of the Talmidim followed him, by the way. That's the only reason why they know about this story. Okay, regardless, yes, that's Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. If you're Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld and you're learning literally 24/7, that's there. Maybe a little bit of a lower level. No, a little bit lower. The really low levels where I am, where I'm saving up and everything like that. The little bit of a low.
Granted, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting.
Yeah. This should be the icker. If only we'd be able to be on this level to be able to sit there. But I will tell you,
be on the level to understand.
Would you be that farmer who sits there on the year of Shemitah and says to themselves, "I better save up my 50-year crops because the 60-year crops may not be enough"? There you go. What are you going to do? Okay, would you do it or not? This is the concept. Are you going to save from the fourth and fifth year because the sixth year may not be enough? Or are you going to say the sixth year will be enough? What is it going to be? This is the concept of Shemitah. I don't want to be a farmer. I've never planned on being a farmer. Who knows? Maybe I'll go to Eretz Yisrael. I'll all of a sudden go on Kibbutz like my dad. I have no idea. But like, regardless, I have no concept of doing such a thing.
No, at that time, you probably were setting yourself up and your family for starvation or malnutrition if you didn't do that.
By Shemitah?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge test.
And that's what it is. And that's what Shemitah was. Exactly. Crazy, right? Exactly. Oh, are you crazy? What, you're going to keep Shemitah? What's wrong with you? Why would you ever keep Shemitah? So crazy. There was no one going around offering them to be in coal and paying them for letting their land fallow. It's unbelievable what they used to keep 100 years ago when they first came to Eretz Yisrael, and the secular kibbutzim started going ahead and working on Shemitah, and the religious ones said, "No, we're going to lay the land fallow," and they said, "You're going to die." And they said, "No, we won't." It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But that was the level of bitachon that they had. Okay, no. that's for now. One last thing, and this is what we're going to end with. You know what? It's already late. I don't think I'm going to be able to get to it. Just a very quick thing, just so you know. V'chai achicha imach, and chav hei lamed hei, lamed vav, I'm sorry, chav hei lamed vav, says, v'chai achicha imach, your brother should live with you. We learn from that. Rabbi Akiva says, chayecha kodon l'chayecha vercha. Two people have a flask, one person has, two people, one flask of water. If both drink, both of them are going to die. Nobody's going to make it. One guy drinks, he'll make it to the yeshuv. Who should drink? Rabbi Kiva says, Chayecha kodin l'chayecha vercha. Your life comes first. Chidush HaRim. Only a Gerar Rava can say this. Chidush HaRim says, only Rabbi Akiva can say this word. You know why? Because Rabbi Akiva said, all my life, in Brachos Samach Beis, all my life, I've wanted to give up my life to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you'll be able to do B'chol Ma'afshecha. His life meant nothing to him. Rabbi Akiva didn't care about his own life. Everybody else, if I go ahead, if I make that statement, like, my life comes before yours, I'm no Gael Bedaver. I want my life to live. So I can't say that about myself, that I come before anybody else. But Rabbi Akiva, who couldn't care less about his life, he could say, Chayecha kodmin l'chayecha vercha. Your life comes before everybody else. Do you know how much of a problem it was for Rabbi Akiva to make another guy die so that he could live? The bigger challenge was to make you live while your friend dies. That was the concept that Rabbi Akiva came up with. And only Rabbi Akiva could come up with that lalacha because everyone else is no gay abadavar. That's the concept of the Chiddush HaRim. That's a great vort. An unbelievable vort. Well, I'm glad the summary is like this. The Parsha's theme is that it's not yours, it's all his. Shemitah is the definition of the purpose of Har Sinai because Shemitah is a mitzvah that proves it was given in Har Sinai. Number three, what if you wouldn't have asked? What if you wouldn't have asked what would have been? We have the Chiddush HaRim. We had Reb Moshe, and then we had the Chassam Sofer. That was the three boards that we had, and then we went into Rebel Yashiv. Rebel Yashiv's whole idea of what Bitachon is in Eretz Yisrael, and only Rebbe Akiva can say Chayecha Kodman, that your life comes before anything else. Only Rebbe Akiva can see he wasn't Nogei B'Davar. Stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbat.